Hello, welcome to the very first Waldman's Words recording of 2017. I just got back from my honeymoon in Tokyo, Vietnam, and Cambodia, and my wife and I had a great time. And I actually even listened to, narcissistically, one of my own shows while in Asia, which was really cool. The internet works in all continents. So this year, we have a whole bunch of guests. Today, we have Zach Seppin. His name is mispronounced much, so I think it's Seppin, but some people call him Seppin, which is wrong. And he works in booking, actually, for High Road Touring, and he works with The Rocket Summer, Jula Vera, a whole bunch of acts, including Lydia, too, which I just caught opening for Paris. So we're going to be talking to him about his experiences growing up, playing in hardcore bands, and then venturing to the dark side, just like I did, in terms of working with talent or quote-unquote talent. The next few weeks are completely booked. We've got Nick Mishko of 10 and 8 Management. We've got Jamie Sivrai of A Voice for an Innocent. We've got Atreyu Ryken, who has his own management company, and he also writes for Alternative Press. We've got Todd Cavall of Ambiguous Management. We've got Greg Long of We Are Triumphant Records, and he also has his own management company, I believe, called Capstone. We also have Matt Vigliotti, who manages bands on Evolve Management, and he also works for Standby Records as an A&R guy. And we've got Patrick Walford, who is an Adobe host, so that's going to be interesting. And last but not least, we've got John James Ryan, who manages 4 Year Strong and Set Your Goals. So this year is going to be really action-packed. I tried to focus as much as possible on talent behind the scenes for this part, and then we'll probably get back to some more band dudes. So thank you guys so much for listening. Every Tuesday night, 5 o'clock on Pacific and 8 o'clock on the other side, that Fish celebrated his new year, where I'm from, in the New York. So Candy Hearts, Boomtown Crooks, Mirror Eyes, and Film Speed are all going to be writing, recording, and hopefully releasing new music this year. Tonight, I'm actually heading down to Orange County for NAMM, which I've never been to before, to see Film Speed play the kickoff performance at the entire festival, which is a big deal. CBS actually covered them. So stick around this year for Waldman Management at WALD MGMT and Waldman's Words. And we'll have Zach on the air in just a few. Thank you. Hello. Welcome back to Waldman's Words, the very first broadcast live of the year with Zach Seppin of High Road Touring. Hello.
Hello. Hi, I'm Zach.
Introduce yourself. Tell us your age, sex, and location.
18. No, I'm 34.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm male. I'm currently in Sausalito, California. That's where the High Road Touring office is that I work out of. But I live in San Francisco, California, which is right over the Golden Gate Bridge from Sausalito.
I just want to let you know that when I went to Sausalito to grab a bite with you and then on my mini moon, it was one of the most gorgeous places ever, despite you being sicker than a college freshman with mono. So thanks again for meeting up with me then.
You're welcome. Thanks for putting up with me is more like it.
You're very apologetic.
I can't remember the last time I was that sick. It was really unfortunate timing. I felt like an asshole. Am I allowed to say that on the air?
You could curse. You could say whatever you want. This is completely censorless. Obviously,
right,
there's certain things that you probably shouldn't say, but
right,
you could do whatever you want, man. I mean, you could say fuck Trump, you know, whatever you want to do.
Well, you know, I'm not going to say that, but anyway, getting back to it, you know, I felt really bad about it, and yes, I was very apologetic. We still haven't seen each other since. Do you realize that?
I have yet to see you well. I mean, I don't know if I'll ever see you well, but I have yet to see you unsick. But it was cool, man. It was great. I actually was more flattered that you were willing to see me sick, because some people usually cancel things when sick. But I think the half-Jewish guilt came into you and you're like, this dude's in San Francisco. Like, he's not here very often.
If we both lived in the same town, I would have rescheduled, but we don't, and it makes it a lot more difficult. And, you know, in a way, I felt like the right thing to do was to – I still went to work that day. So it's not like I was on my deathbed and I couldn't walk or anything or couldn't talk. I practically couldn't talk. But anyway, we met a while ago. It was a good meeting. I still owe you lunch. I'll take you to lunch sometime.
This is how he is on the phone, by the way.
When I've been in L.A. since then, you've been out of town. You were on something called like a honeymoon or something. I'm not really sure what that is, but I hear it's a thing. So
it's a novel concept. It's kind of like where you go with your significant other and you dread coming back to work for a few weeks. That's what a honeymoon is. So it was awesome. I got to see a lot of Asia. I saw Tokyo, which was insane, Vietnam and Cambodia, and I actually hung out in a South Korean airport. So there you go.
What do you mean you hung out in a South Korean airport?
Well, it was a connecting flight. We were in Seoul twice. I don't know. I like to say that I've been to South Korea. My wife, ever the ball buster, is like, you've been to a South Korean airport. That's not going to South Korea. But you know what? Technically, I've been in South Korea, so suck it, Trebek. Anyway, so we did not meet just because I hit you up blind and then met you in San Francisco. I know that we met via a semi-Mark Wahlberg reference. So how do we meet? We talk about that first, and then we just go into our lives.
Well, I think you cold emailed me, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah, and you made a really good comment about this. So on the Higher Auditorium website, I think we have a page that says something about me and some music you've been listening to, book you've been reading, what you've been watching. And I think at the time, I must have changed it because I'm trying to, you know, keep away the Scott Wallmans of the world from approaching me and having me eat lunch with them while I'm really sick. I said something about, you know, watching anything Mark Wahlberg related.
Yep.
I don't know why, but I really like Mark Wahlberg in movies. Maybe it's just the movies that I like. But anyway, he's a good actor and he plays roles that I connect to. Or I don't really connect to them. I think I just like them.
I really liked I Heart Huckabees. I wish that movie did better. That movie was really good. And, well, Boogie Nights, those are probably my two favorite Mark Wahlberg movies. But that's just me.
There's this really cheesy movie that he's in called Four Brothers that I love.
Do you connect to Mark Wahlberg's role in Four Brothers, or do you connect to his role in Boogie Nights?
Both.
Oh, wow. So a porn star robber? Is that what you...
porn star robber. You know, I'm rolling in dough. What do you call it? He's also in that movie, The Departed, that I really
like. Oh, that movie. And his role in Departed is amazing. And I think he's actually one of the only people who doesn't die in The Departed. Like, everyone dies in that movie. That movie is really great. And it's crazy that that's the movie that Martin Scorsese won Best Director for, and it won Best Picture, which when you think about it, like, he's made Goodfellas, he's made incredible movies. But anyway, I digress. So speaking of rolling in the dough, you've played in hardcore bands. Let's hear about that.
Rolled in a lot of dough back in those days.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so I'm originally from Canoga Park, California, in the valley.
Cobalt.
Seriously, I never... Oh, no, wait, did I play there? Yeah, I think I played there once when I was in a hardcore band, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I played a show there with Scars of Tomorrow and maybe, like, Taken or something.
Wow.
It's so long ago, I don't remember. But I'm from the valley. I moved to Salinas when I was 11, Salinas, California, which is by Monterey. It's where John Steinbeck's from, and it's, like, the lettuce capital of the country. That's about anything anyone knows about Salinas. Oh, and that there's an In-N-Out that sometimes people stop at while driving along the 101 freeway.
Wow, the infamous In-N-Out. It's kind of like the Del Taco in Barstow. It's the very first Del Taco in America, and people go nuts because they have like one taco that's not on the menu, kind of like secret, which is kind of rare. Anyway, so Salinas, California, hardcore bands. It's funny.
I have an older brother who's about 4.5 years older than me, and he got me into things like Nirvana at a young age and Soundgarden and Pearl Jam. And then my first memory of listening to metal, this is kind of funny, was I was about 12 or 13. I'm sitting in my dad's GMC Jimmy in a church parking lot in Aptos, California, listening to Slayer's Divine Intervention.
Oh, wow.
With my older brother and a few of his church friends.
Wait, wait, you were listening to Slayer in a church,
in a church parking lot? That's, in a church parking lot.
Is that irony? I don't know what that is, but that's really, that's a juxtaposition if I ever heard one. That's awesome.
Thank you, God, for getting me into Slayer. But that's my first recollection of listening to metal. And so I got really big into metal and then hard rock, things like Jimi Hendrix, Black Sabbath, stuff mm-hmm. like that. And I play guitar from an early age, and I took guitar class in high school. It was basically just a chance for me to shred and jam for an hour a day at school instead of taking another class, because I practiced so much at that point that I was better at guitar than my guitar teacher.
Oh, wow.
The school music teacher wasn't like a guitar aficionado. He was just like a jazz band teacher.
Right.
But anyway, there was a guy in my class named Miles. Miles was a couple years younger than me. He must have been 15. I must have been 17. And he was into hardcore things like Strife, Earth Crisis.
Oh, wow. The straight edge stuff?
The straight edge stuff.
Nice.
He was a 15-year-old straight edger. I was not straight edge. I became straight edge, actually. But anyway, he gave me Victory Style 3, which was a Victory Records compilation.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Hatebreed song on there. It was the third song on the record, Satisfaction is the Death of Desire. And that song kind of blew my mind. And it was so heavy and raw and in your face and intense and was like metal, but different. And
New York hardcore, dude.
But it also felt like there was a real personal connection to it outside of just the music, where metal was just like, but you know, what kind of 12, 13, 15, 16-year-old kid did I have, like, as an actual lyrical connection with a Slayer song?
Right.
Zero, come on. None.
Guardian of Death is going to the store. Graveyard. Like, yeah. It's a little bit different.
Anyway, and so he got me into that. And in guitar class, we ended up starting a band, my best friend, Miles, and I. And it was just like a tough guy hardcore band. And we were trying to find a singer, and I think we posted an ad on the paper or something.
Mm-hmm.
I was like 16, 17 years old. I mean, maybe 17, so this is, you know, 17 years ago. This guy Jason and a guy named Josh hit us up, and they were a singer and guitar player, and they came to our practice, and we jammed with them, and they were a little bit older than us. I think they might have been about 2 or 3 years older than us, and maybe they bullied us into being in a band with them, but mm-hmm. we ended up doing it, and we changed the style of our music a little bit. It became a little slower. It was more like disembodied in 18 Visions hardcore.
But,
and it evolved over time and became more metal because that was my roots, and I think we might have even had like a guitar solo once.
Oh, wow.
Maybe twice.
You got to shred maybe a few once. Times.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, and
did you guys gig and record? Were you an active band?
Totally recorded, totally played gigs. We sent our demos to, you know, every hardcore label: Trustkill, Ferret, Victory, everyone that you know you could even think of.
Mm-hmm.
And we amassed a little bit of a following in our hometown, and maybe a little bit of the places around Salinas.
What were you
Not
called?
Much. Scott, you didn't tell me that I had to reveal this information.
Oh, no. Okay, fine. Okay, they were called Vision of Disorder, and that was it. You don't have to. You could say whatever you want.
It was called Fake 13. It was a pretty terrible name. I didn't come up with it.
Whatever. Hoobastank, you know, they did pretty well.
Yeah, but Hoobastank is it's kind of a catchy name. so what I did was we lived... Salinas is about 45 minutes from Santa Cruz. All mm-hmm. the hardcore bands would play Santa Cruz. So what I did was I started emailing all booking agents asking them if they would sell me shows in Salinas. Finally, an agent whose name was Jim something or other, he doesn't exist anymore, at least not in music.
He doesn't exist. He's dead to me.
sold me a show. It was this band Brothers Keeper that was on Trustkill
uh-huh.
and a band called Unearth, who I think is on Metal Blade these days.
No, both of those bands have done well. I've heard of them, so.
Cool.
Well, that's the barometer for having done well.
So yeah, I've heard of them. Yep. I don't know the music, but I've heard of them.
Yeah, I mean they sound like klezmer music, you know, on Earth. Continue.
But anyway, he sold me a show. I did a show for these bands in Salinas at a record store, I think, that had turned into something else. I don't know. It might have been a bong shop for all I remember. Mm. And, you know, it didn't do crazy numbers. It did about 60 or 80 people. But that was the start of building a hardcore scene in Salinas. And what happened was I kept bugging agents, and they kept selling me more and more shows. And then bands would play Salinas instead of Santa Cruz. And so there was this rivalry between Salinas and Santa Cruz in terms of our hardcore scenes. Like, people always mugged me, and I was small. I mean, I weigh like 130 pounds now. Mm-hmm. So I never weighed much. And, you know, I would go to shows, and, you know, I was like 17 or 18 years old when I first started doing it, and older guys would just kind of like look at me and talk shit to me sometimes. But, you know, I just kept doing what I was doing.
You mean talk shit about you bringing a scene to your area and kind of taking away from their scene?
Yeah. Like, there was shit, like, on the Bay Area hardcore message board and stuff like that.
Fuck that guy.
I don't know. I developed the scene to about 400 people, which was great for, you know, a podunk cow town.
Podunk lettuce town.
Lettuce and John Steinbeck.
Nice.
And then, but what happened was I would trade shows with bands in Southern California and to get us gigs. And, you know, I would hit up other bands and get shows, and it worked. And eventually my band, we went on tour a couple of times. Not that we necessarily needed to, but we wanted to. We were a straight edge band. We finally got a record deal with this label called United Edge out of Canada.
Wait. A straight edge label?
Yep.
I didn't know that existed. That's awesome.
Well, it did at that point. I don't know about now. But, yeah, it really did. We met her once somewhere in Texas, maybe Dallas. Anyway, moving back, we went on tour. I realized that I liked the putting on shows, the promoting and booking aspect, a lot more than playing in the band. Mm-hmm. And I think I knew in the back of my head that you're in a hardcore band, dude. Like, you're never going to make it financially playing the kind of music you're playing right now. And also, you play guitar pretty well, and you're a mediocre songwriter at best. Like, you got to figure something else out. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did.
You realize you were never going to be as good as Paul McCartney, so you transitioned.
Yeah. Even Paul McCartney's dog.
Yeah, Paul McCartney's dog shreds, dude. But yeah. Here's the thing, which was funny, is you did this kind of effortlessly. Number two on my list was playing in hardcore bands. Number three was transition to biz side. Whoa. You're doing it. You're doing it without me actually instigating, I'm proud of you.
I'm telling my life story in more depth and good thing I've already had a coffee. Rambling on the phone more in depth than I ever have to anybody. So,
wow. Thank you.
Next step. So, when I was 20, I think, I moved to San Francisco because, you know, I needed to go to college. Mm-hmm. And I commuted to Salinas for about a year, still playing my band. And then I realized, I was like, you know, at this point, this thing isn't going anywhere. We're not good enough. You know, I'm going to school now. That's taken up a bunch of my time. Also, I'd been straight edge for almost 5 years, and I sold out.
I sold out when I was 20, dude. No, actually, no. I sold out on my 21st birthday. My friends got me a 6-pack of O'Doul's at our dinner, and I took a drink, and I was just like, fuck it. Like, the reason that I'm straight edge is because I'm afraid I'm going to become a crazy drug addict, alcoholic, and I was conforming to nonconformity. So I sold out. But you sold out, and then you bought back in, right?
Not exactly. Okay. I sold out a week before I turned 22.
Okay.
I was at UC Berkeley in somebody's dorm room with a girl, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I sold out on a Smirnoff Ice, like a watermelon flavor or something. And I think I had one and I was drunk.
Well, yeah, because you're you don't weigh much, and B, your tolerance is completely different if you haven't done it in a long time. So
exactly.
Yep.
anyway, and then I told my band. I was still in band at the time, and I told them, and I was like, look, I'm not straight edge anymore. And it was a straight edge band. I played a few more shows. I quit. I realized that, shit, now I got a summer break. I don't have anything to do. I don't have a band anymore. We're not going on tour. So I tried, I thought, and I was like, who can I go on tour with? There was a band on Equal Vision called Time in Malta. Mm-hmm. Do you know who that band was?
No, I actually don't. I mean, I know Equal Vision, well, much like Victory, shifted gears from their beginnings. Like Victory was like the whole rabies stuff and really heavy, heavy, heavy stuff. And Equal Vision, I think it started because it was Shelter's label, right?
Something like that, yeah.
So, no, I don't know that band, but continue.
Okay, well, the band was originally from Indianapolis. They'd moved to the Bay Area, and I think we had played with them a couple of times. Maybe we, 18 Visions did a tour of California, and Time Malta was on it, and I think we were on a couple of the shows, and that's how we became friends. Mm-hmm. But I went to a show, and one of the guys was there, and I asked them if they needed a merch guy. They did. I went on tour with them. We did two tours that summer. We did a tour. The first tour was opening for a band called Beloved.
Yeah, I know them, definitely.
They were like a Tooth and Nail band or something, Solid State.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did, God, this is funny, we did a tour where we're Sick of It All as the headliner.
Oh, wow.
Tear as direct support, Time of Malta as second to four, and Champion as first to four. It started at Hellfest in New Jersey, and then routed west from there. On the tour, I think it was that tour, we stopped in Salt Lake City, and our tour manager at the time was friends with this woman, Margie Alburn, who had a company called Do It Booking, mm-hmm. and she was living in Salt Lake. I think she's still there. We stayed the night at her house, and I told her that I wanted to be an agent, and I lived in the Bay Area, and I didn't know of any agencies, so she told me the two that I should contact. One was High Road Touring,
nice.
And another was called Cork. Cork no longer exists. I think it was assumed, bought by the agency group.
Mm-hmm.
The day I got home from the tour, I emailed them both. Cork did not write me back. High Road Touring did. And they gave me an interview for an internship. They told me to bring in two CDs to my internship interview. I brought in the Tear record I was listening to at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Paula Abdul's Greatest Hits.
Okay, very similar.
Very similar. And I told my boss, Frank Riley, at the interview that I wanted to be a booking agent, and they gave me an internship.
Do you think they were more sold on the Terror or the Paula Abdul?
Paula, for sure.
Oh, I mean, she definitely would move more units.
I don't think they had any idea who Terror was. I think people got a kick out of the fact that some kid who's like 21, 22, however old I was at the point, comes into their office with, you know, a hardcore CD and a pop singer's Greatest Hits. I mean, they just don't really make any sense together, but it shows my musical scope.
Straight up and straight edge. Oh!
Shut the fuck
bum,
up.
Bum, bum, bum. Well, I will shut the fuck up because we're going to take a little bit of a break and the commercials will run and we'll be back where we could talk more about this transition to the biz side and working with High Road. So stick around for Zach Seppin on Waldman's Words. Hello, we are back with Zach Seppin of High Road Touring, who actually started talking about his internship at High Road, where he brought a Terror CD and a Paula Abdul CD and got the internship position. So kids, if you kind of want to do it this way, you should bring a Knocked Loose CD to your interview along with a Katy Perry CD, and you're in the clear.
That sounds like a really good idea. I think Jake Round would like that, too.
He would love it. Pure Noise is looking for that. Jake Round, didn't you live with him?
I did, for 2 years.
That's pretty wild.
It's been a little over a year since we lived together. I miss Jake. I love Jake. He's a great guy. He's actually probably one of the best people I've ever met. No joke.
Wow. That's really bold. That's a big statement. So,
it really is, but it's really true. He's really a... Let's not talk about other people. Let's move on to this.
Well, so the people listening, so we're not name-dropping McDropperson, he owns Pure Noise Records. Okay, that's it. So you transitioned to the biz side. Were you doing the internship simultaneously with college?
Yeah. So I started interning. I think I was interning 2 days a week for 3 to 5 hours a day, something like that. And at the same time, I was in school full-time, and I had one or two other jobs. My parents didn't really have much money while I was growing up, so they paid for some of my, like my first year of college, I think. And I think after that, I think I had to pay my own rent, pay most of my college myself, and intern. So it was kind of a lot, but, you know, it worked out, so no complaints.
Well, it gave you a bit of a work ethic, you know?
Yeah, it did.
So you weren't handed anything. A lot of times when I meet people who are handed a lot of stuff, they're entitled and lazy, so fuck them.
Yeah. Anyway, so I started interning here. And what happened was that I would finish the semester and, you know, my internship for the semester would be over, but they would just hire me off for the next one. So I think I was here maybe a year and a half or something while I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a woman named Amy Davidman, who's an agent at Paradigm now. She was Frank, the owner of my company. She was his assistant at the time. And she was moving to Chicago because she was for some personal reason. And it just worked out where the timing is. I took her job. So the Monday after I graduated college, I started full-time here. So I didn't have any, like, you know, post-college backpacking through Europe, any of that kind of bullshit, but I did have a job doing exactly what I wanted to do. So I felt very fortunate, very lucky. I guess I didn't screw up too much while I was an intern.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
I mean, they hired you. Not every intern gets hired by
no.
anyone's company. So that means you did something right.
You know, the thing about, man, so since I've been at High Road, we bought a smaller agency in New York called Blackbird. I didn't buy it, but High Road did. And now we have an office in New York. But other than that, I think every single person who's worked here, who's been hired since me, kind of started at the bottom, either as an intern or at answering the phones and just worked their way up. So
they're very in-house.
Yeah, but, you know, you know, someone puts in the effort and the work and does a good job at the bottom level, and, you know, and this is what they want to do, they can build themselves up, and, you know, that hard work should be rewarded.
I agree. Anyway, so you became an assistant. You were the assistant to the head of the company?
Yeah, I was. But wow. I was also doing college booking. I kind of helped develop our college department while I was an intern and post-intern.
What does that entail exactly?
Well, what I did was...
Now I'm asking you about your job. I'm sorry. I'm asking you a specific question about your job. I feel awful.
Fine.
Okay?
It's fine. I can answer the question, Scott Waldman.
Thanks, Zach Seppin.
You're welcome.
People always say my full name. I don't know if it's condescension or just rolls off the tongue, but continue.
Well, in that term, time it was.
Thanks, asshole.
You're welcome. Anyway, so what happened was, okay, we're going to have to step back. While I was interning here, I had an intern coordinator. Her name was Annabelle. She was the college booker and the Performing Arts Center booker here. Man, how do I say this without sounding bad? She basically had me doing her job.
Yeah, that definitely didn't sound bad. Good job on that. How do I say this without sounding bad? This person was fucking incompetent.
No, not at all, but maybe a little bit lazy. So I sat back here in the back office where I'm sitting right now, actually, just 10 feet away, and I would call colleges and email colleges and go through this directory of colleges, and I would just make contacts and find out, like, who the right contact was. You know, do they have, you know, welcome back events, year-end events? Do they have a weekly series? What was their talent budget for the year? Stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, they pay well.
You know, that is not 100% correct, Scott.
Okay, well, sometimes they
can pay well. The college I went to has shit for money and does not pay well, but okay. You know, sometimes they could pay $1,500, and if you're a developing band getting paid $250 a night to support a tour, getting a $1,500 gig in the midst of a tour is like, I don't know, fucking finding, you know, free money on the ground or something.
Yep. The city drive got paid I think like a few grand for a show at Dominican University in San Rafael, California, in the middle of a tour. So there you go.
I'm not going to say who it was for. One time booked a show for a band at college, and they got paid $50,000 and they played to 40 people.
Oh, wow. I mean, good on that band. But
yeah, 40
wow.
people, $50,000. What a bad use of the school's money.
Yeah, that's pretty awful. That's more than most record advances. That's amazing.
I don't know. School, you know, sometimes schools do a really bad job of depends on the school. Sometimes they can do a bad job of promoting. And I think that's just what happened in this situation. It has nothing to do with the actual band. It was just...
No, but...
I don't know.
I mean...
Maybe they booked it on the same night that there was some other, like, you know, huge event on campus or some huge event in the community.
That's what my bands on tour always tell me. Like, no, there was another show up the block. So that means that they...
There's always going to be another show up the block.
That means that they got $1,250 per person at the show.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, it was a Hillary Clinton dinner.
What?
I'm just kidding. Anyway.
That's why she lost. She wasn't connecting. All right, stop it.
Anyway, where were we?
Talking about your transition.
Yeah, so I was booking college gigs and reading. One of my jobs is Frank's assistant. I was one of two assistants. I read his emails. He got a lot of emails every day, and he still does. So basically, I was someone who was the first line of defense.
So you screened
him. Hundreds and hundreds of emails a day and on a bunch of calls. You don't see everything the minute it comes through. So if there was a problem, I could tell him. Also, if there was a chain of emails where 10 people were writing back to the same email, I would basically delete the bottom 9 so that he'd get the top one, the newest one, had all of them connected. Stuff like that.
So you would filter his inbox?
Filter his inbox, that is correct.
Okay.
That's a good way of putting it.
Thank you. So last, I screwed up on the college thing, but, you know, I phrased this
you
well,
made up,
so I can sleep soundly.
You're making up for it, slowly but surely.
Thank you.
Anyway, while I was doing that also, we used to represent a band called Those Darlings, and Frank signed Those Darlings while I was reading his emails, and I kind of just inserted myself into the situation where, you know, the manager and him were talking about maybe doing a tour, and I would just go out and ask the promoters for avails without Frank even asking me to do it, just to start collecting the info, and I think you could see the go-getter in me.
Right.
And I started to book bands that way, and there's a band I represent called Lydia.
Yep, I actually spoke about them in the preview to this show.
Oh, well, look at you.
Yeah, look at me.
They were at High Road with a different agent, but it wasn't exactly working out, and I didn't have any clients of my own at that time. But you know, they thought that maybe it could work where they transitioned Lydia to me, and I really liked the band. I was already a fan, and I had a call with them and with the manager, and it worked out. So that's how I got my first client, actually. I think that might have been like 2009 or 10.
Wow.
So that's when I first started booking bands. I mean, I was still, you know, also Frank's assistant.
Right, but you know, you at least
for like another year or two after. But that's the first time I started to, like, where I had to, you know, be responsible for something and respond to a manager and
damn managers.
Yeah. So that was my very first client.
Who is High Road known for besides Lydia, of course?
Probably the two. Some of the things we're known for are Ryan Adams,
mm-hmm.
Wilco, Alabama Shakes, Broken mm-hmm. Social Scene, Patti Smith.
Wow.
Robert Plant.
Small-time, you know, people.
And then there's a lot of other things. You know, there's young and developing things, and there's established artists. I would say that most of our artists are more in the rock, Americana, singer-songwriter world.
Right, indie.
Most of my bands I work with, I would say, are just American or a little bit of European rock bands. Like I have some things that, you know, in this world where I think most of your audience might live, like I have Lydia and The Rocket Summer, and I book a couple of smaller things like All Get Out and this band called Jewel Vera that's on Pure Noise. And
spoke about Rocket Summer, spoke about Lydia, so you hit the nail on the head. But who else do you work with besides those bands?
So I book a band called Foxygen. I book a kind of a metal-y, folky band called All Them Witches. Mm-hmm. A couple of younger and developing things like Sunflower Bean. And I book a Venezuelan dance disco band called Los Amigos Invisibles. I have this, you know, I was in L.A. last week on Friday through Monday. I went down to, I have this really young band called The Regrets. Mm-hmm. That are all teenagers, but it's like mind-blowingly good. They played their record release show on Friday at the Echo in L.A. It was sold out in advance.
Wow. That's hard to do in L.A., kids, so good job, Regrets.
Yeah, well, it was only, I think, their second or third headline show.
Oh, wow.
And it was a record release show. The record was out that day. So, you know, we're just getting started, but I couldn't recommend another band so much. It's wild. It's fucking unreal. You know, there's other things, but I don't even have my roster in front of me, and sometimes I kind of forget what I'm exactly working on.
You're talking to Scott Waldman on Waldman's Words.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Glad to assist. You're actually the first person I've had a phone interview with that wasn't there when I first called. So congratulations.
I was actually taking a piss.
Oh, so. Wow. They said you were on a conference call, and I was like, we have a call scheduled. I guess you're on a conference call with a urinal. You know, you never know.
Because I told them that I had that call, and they probably thought I was already on it.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Have you had any other agents on the show yet?
No.
You didn't even ask about what I do.
I did so. I asked about your entire career, and I wanted this to seem... My next question were, you know, public stories and what you do. What does a booking agent do for those listening? No, we've had a lot of artists and managers and producers on the show in 2016 when I first started. And I told you about the show when I first started it. And this year, we're booked through mid-March. You're actually the first person I'm interviewing post-honeymoon. And it's pretty much all managers. We've got this guy, Nick Mishko, who's a manager. We've got...
Yeah, I know who that is.
Yeah, we've got Todd Koval. We've got Greg Long, Matt Vigliotti, John James. Yeah, the majority of our people this year are managers. We actually have a record label owner. We have someone who works for A Voice for the Innocent, which is a nonprofit. So we're focusing on the biz side now, and you're starting that chain, so mazel tov.
Cool. Well, I'm happy to be here.
Me too. And I'm happy you're out of the urinal and you didn't start the interview while peeing. So thanks for that. So what does a booking agent do?
I think that might be a crime in a couple states. Anyway.
Probably Alabama. Yeah, because a lot of people think whenever I tell people that I'm a manager, so they're like, do you get banned shows? And I'm like, well, legally I'm not supposed to. So what do you do?
So I would say my job... I define it. I represent artists and develop live touring careers. So, what that means is, you know, I book all the shows the band I represent, or an artist I represent plays in, generally in North America, South America, and depending on the artist, it can go to Australia and Asia too. The company I work at does not work in Europe. Everyone essentially has a European agent as well. But our core business is U.S. and Canada. Say Scott Waldman is an artist.
Right.
And I represent Scott Waldman. Why did I sign Scott Waldman in the first place? First off, I really enjoyed the music. I thought he wrote really good songs. I thought that he could play his songs well. I thought he had ambition. I thought his ideals and where he sees himself in the world align with where I see him in the world.
So he had a vision, a good vision.
Yeah, he had a good vision, and I thought that vision made sense for him. And I thought I could be an asset to him. I understood the music, I understood the audience, and I could actually do the job that he needs me to do. Sometimes, you know, there are things that you think are great, but, you know, it might be outside your wheelhouse. And sure, we can all learn new things, and sometimes that's really exciting to do something different than you've normally done, because it puts you in with different buyers and gives you a different perspective. And the way I see it is the more wider spectrum you have, the better helps you do specific things. But sometimes you don't have the time really at the moment to completely learn something new, and or you're just not sure that you're really the right person for it. And sometimes you just end up not doing those things. You remain a fan from afar, but you think it's just not what you want to be doing in terms of business. Anyway, so Scott,
yes, I'm here.
Kind of got off track here.
No. You didn't. You were explaining that you're into an artist. You just spoke about it a little bit longer than I thought you would. But keep going.
Yeah, and so Scott needs to get started. He's played around locally for a while, and you know, he's from, I don't know, he's from New York City, and he's developed a little bit of an audience there, and he can sell out the 250 capacity Mercury Lounge, and there's starting to be some manager interest and a little bit of label interest, and you know, so you know, we're trying to figure out the next steps for Scott, and one of the things we think is appropriate is developing an audience regionally, so playing the major markets close to home, like Philly, Boston, D.C., Pittsburgh, places like that. And, you know, we submit him for tours, and maybe there's an appropriate artist he can go open for that brings him into places where he hasn't played yet, or lets him return to places he's already played in front of a larger audience that he played to on his own.
Okay.
I'm not really sure where I'm going with this now.
Well, you're just talking about how it's a lot more work than just submitting for tours or submitting for shows.
Oh yeah, I mean, there has to be strategy involved, and there needs to be people. You can't be the only person around the project that knows what you're doing. It requires a team. It's a lot. Getting something going is really hard. It takes a lot of work and a little bit of luck. And if you can't
I'd say a lot of luck, but everything.
Yeah. And if you can't rely on the people around you to help you get the job done that you need done,
it's DOA.
You might not even want to be involved in that project.
Mm-hmm.
But my job includes, you know, booking shows, getting band support tours, getting bands on festivals, developing, you know, the touring where they play headline shows and they develop their large audience larger and larger, and they can go play, you know, they start off playing the most obvious markets where that are early adopters like New York, LA, Chicago, San Francisco, mm-hmm. Toronto, and then, you know, you add markets like DC, Philly, Boston, Detroit, Cleveland, and, you know, you add places like Columbus and Minneapolis and then Seattle, Portland, and then from there you add other places like Denver and Salt Lake and Texas and Atlanta and Nashville, and part
goal
of
is to build
the
everywhere.
Career, it depends on where they're from. If you're a U.S.-based artist, you play a lot of places in the U.S. If you're an international artist, you're not going to play as many places because you don't want to waste your time while you're here, and you also need to play the places that are necessary and affordable. Mm-hmm. So if you're from Australia, the chances of you playing Oxford, Mississippi are pretty slim.
Yeah, it's hard to play a B market when you're traveling here on a visa. I get it.
Yeah, there's just, you know, if you're getting $10,000 in New York City, why are you going to go play Oxford, Mississippi for $2,500? It just doesn't make any sense.
And flying to America is expensive.
You're probably going to lose that money. And the whole one of my jobs is to make sure you don't lose money.
Well, we're losing a little bit of time, so I want you to sound off. But before you do, I just want to say thank you very much for doing this. I'm going to remind you, you did great. You did awesome. I hope the people listening agree with me. I hope your friends and colleagues agree too. So I guess we could sound off on if you want to tell anyone, you know, how to get a hold of you, or if you don't want them to, you don't have to do that. Or if you want to just say some stuff about the San Francisco scene. The choice is yours.
Well, I'm old, so I don't really know much about the scene anymore.
Okay. You weren't around for Hate in Ashbury, like that scene, or no?
I mean, I know what's going on in San Francisco. I've lived here 13 years, and, you know, I may not go out as much as I used to, but I still am pretty active, and I'm paying attention to what people are going on, and, you know, and I know younger people than me, and there's younger people within our offices that can tell us what's going on, too.
The kids.
Yeah, in terms of getting hold of me, you know, you just go to the High Road Touring email or website. My email's on there.
You talk about Mark Wahlberg, you'll probably get a response.
Yeah, I think I took him off of there after Scott contacted me, but, you know, you maybe you can make a connection via whatever else is up there now. Thank you very much, Scott, for having me on this. I hope that, you know, some of the information I gave is actually useful. And
100%.
And people didn't feel like they were wasting their time listening to me, and I was happy to do this, and it was a very, you know, I didn't really give it any thought going into it. I was just like, I'll just talk as I go, and I feel like that was the way to do it.
That is the way to do it. You don't want it to feel like I have an outline, but I don't have a script, you know, so it has to feel sincere and genuine, and like you said, like we're having a conversation, which we were, as opposed to reading dialogue off a script. So thank you again. Shout out to High Road Touring. Every Tuesday night, 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern time, Waldman's Words. This will be a really good year, and we're starting with you. So thank you, and have yourself a wonderful 2017. I'm sure we'll talk about insubstantial things soon.
Happy 2017, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.